Initiating startup sequence.
You're listening to the Loud and Queer podcast, Australia's only national radio show by and for queer youth.
Hello and welcome to show two of Loud and Queer. You're on Sin Nation. You're here with Daniel.
And I am Rob. And we have a guest host in today. Introduce yourself.
Hi there. My name is Alistair. Happy to join you in here. Pronouns he, him. I am a gay. So
yeah. Nice.
Technically allowed to appear on this show.
Awesome. I also go by he, him pronouns and identify as queer. And you, Dan?
I go by he, him pronouns as well and I identify as queer as well.
Awesome.
So we have a pretty jam-packed show today. Later on in the show, we'll be talking to Alistair a bit about his work as a screenwriter and comedian.
And just have general banter as well.
Yep.
Yeah. After that, we're going to tee up an interview with Simona Castricum, who is an electronic dance music artist who is playing at the upcoming festival, Gay Times, which is coming up next weekend. And, pretty much right after these next couple of songs, I'm going to review Call Me By Your Name. And by review, I mean roast.
Yeah.
But first, we're going to have a few songs. Coming up first, we have You're the One, which is by Kate Renata featuring Sid. And then after that, we have Chanel by Frank Ocean.
You're listening to Loud and Queer on Sin Nation. My name's Daniel. And you just heard Chanel by Frank Ocean. And before that, we heard You're the One by Kate Renata featuring Sid, which is probably one of my favourite songs at the minute because I love Kate Renata. But, two good songs to start off the show, I think. We're now going to be talking about the film Call Me By Your Name, and I'm going to pass over to Rob for this one.
Thank you very much. So firstly, I'm just going to give a brief synopsis of the film. So, you know, Call Me By Your Name starts off Northern Italy, very beautiful, and it's about like this family, a mum and a dad, and a son. It's all about the dad's an anthropologist, or a paleontologist or something like that, and he has an intern that comes to stay with him while they're doing research or planning a trip, something like that. Effectively, the son of the mother and father falls in love, or not falls in love, is infatuated by this man that is staying with them, and it's mutual, and they have a thing, and then the man ends up leaving and, like, marries a woman at the end of the day.
Okay.
So, first of all, I'm going to start off with things I liked about the film. The cast was great. It was really well casted. It was a great location. Northern Italy is beautiful. Duh. Great cinematography. It was shot really well. The only thing that sucked was the plot. The plot was so lackluster. It was just so hollow. It just had no substance at all. It kind of like tries to make you feel something purely on the basis of it being a queer film. It like tries to like really tear at your heartstrings because a lot of people that go to see it are obviously queer. And it's just kind of like, oh yeah, this is like a queer kind of thing. This will get people to feel something. And like, oh, I wasn't having that. I'm like, I want something that's actually going to make me feel something. Yeah. I was like, it's kind of like, why is this even sad? Like, they had a fling, the guy leaves, and like, the kid's sad about it. It's like, get a real problem, dude. It's also annoying because it's like literally the same plot line as every other queer film. It's just like, oh yeah, like a unexpected romance and between these two like people who think that they're maybe straight and like they find out that they're actually there's like homoerotic things going on and they kind of have this fling but then it never works out. And I was actually talking to my friend Bridget the other day about a lot of queer films kind of have the same kind of ending where the couple doesn't really end up together, usually either like a breakup or a death or like something like that. And it's kind of like, why is they never together? Like, I'd love to see a queer film where, like, they actually are together. And, yeah, I don't know. It's silly. Annoying because it's, like, a typical queer film. It's, like, a cis white man's, like, perspective. And it's just kind of like, oh, yeah, we don't get enough of that, do we? yeah, and it just, like, I don't know. It's just, like, kind of get a real problem, dude. Like, it's, like, set in the 70s, so I understand it's kind of, like, a weird time. But it's also, like, the parents are very cool with the son being queer. Like, they seem to know that he has affection for this man, and obviously knows that this man has affection for him as well. Like, they're on holiday, or, like, they're on holiday in, like, northern Italy. It's, like, which is beautiful. The family's, like, very comfortable. They all speak different languages. They're all very educated. Like, what do you have to be sad about? Yeah, like, you had a summer fling with this person that lasted maybe, like, 2 months, and then, like, the whole kind of, like, everyone was so sad because they couldn't be together. And it's, like, what are you talking about? Like, get a real problem. It's not that sad. Like, yeah. I went in with the intention of crying. I was like, I'm going to go see this film because I want to bawl my eyes out in a cinema with my friends, absolutely shameless. And I was just kind of waiting the whole time for it to get sad. And then at the end, like, he's, like, looking into the fireplace, and then he just starts crying. And I was kind of like, oh, yeah, this is, like, maybe where it starts. And then the credits start rolling. Oh, and God. I was furious. I was like, what is this? It's like, this is not a real film.
As you were watching it, did you find yourself kind of tuning out, or did you feel yourself getting angry as you watched it?
I was definitely invested in the storyline, because I was like, oh, this is interesting. The scenery is really beautiful. The dynamics between the characters are really interesting. But it just wasn't sad. It's just like, you could, like, literally close your eyes, go into the queer section of, like, Netflix, scroll, click randomly on a page, play it, and it would be the same plot. Like, it'd be exact same plot.
Yep, okay.
I was just really salty about it. I just, like, I don't know.
I think given the amount of press and just coverage that it's received...
just so much hype.
Do you think that maybe it's received so much coverage in sort of the mainstream media because maybe, like, I don't support this, but maybe for the sort of hetero white majority, it's maybe easier for them to swallow a queer story if the main characters sort of don't fall under sort of intersectionality and are just sort of white characters which sort of come from a background sort of more or less similar to their own background. Like, I don't support that, but do you think that maybe that's why it's become sort of a... I'm not going to be able to pronounce this word properly, but I can't say it.
Phenomenon.
Yeah, that's the word I'm trying to say.
Like, you're probably definitely right, actually. But I don't know. I feel like a lot of straight people that go to see the film are just going to, like it because it's a queer film, and they probably feel really progressive going to see a queer film.
Yeah, that's what I hate.
Yeah.
Like, it's cool to, like,
oh, we're going to go see a queer film. Like, how trendy are we?
Yeah.
Like, getting in with the gays kind of thing. And then, like, they probably found it sad because they're like, oh, it's just really sad because, you know, they've been through so much stuff and, like, they don't get to be together at the end of the day and, like, oh, my God, it's just so sad.
Yeah, it's quite infuriating.
Yeah, it's fetishizing, which is what we were talking about last episode.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just, like, straight people fetishizing us again.
Mm.
Yeah.
Do you maybe have a film that you have seen where... a queer film that you've seen that you've actually thought, well, yes, like, that was well done. I really...
Yeah. Probably one of my favourite queer films is My Own Private Idaho.
Okay.
Definitely. Which is really great.
Beautiful performance.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Like, so good. Keanu Reeves and Riff Phoenix, awesome.
And a believable, relatable context for that kind of romance, whereas, I guess, maybe the chaste 1970s setting of the world of archaeology maybe is, you know, connects with, the disposable income archaeology baby boomers who can buy these cinema tickets and might explain why it is doing relatively well commercially to everyone except its intended market or even with the intended market. But, yeah, My Own Private Idaho, I think.
Yeah, but I also like queer films that aren't always about romance. Like, Paris is Burning, great documentary, really, like... has a really, really important subjectivity. It's all about, like, queer people, people of colour in Harlem in, like the 80s and all about, like, the balls. And it's just, like, such a good queer film because it's just, like, not about romance, none of that stuff. It's just, like, a documentary about people being people. And but another queer film that I've seen that I actually really liked is, I can't remember the name of it, but it was on Netflix and I was feeling, like, pretty sad. So I was like, oh, I'm going to watch a queer film. And it was, like, about these two Polish youths that ended up getting together and they went through their hardships, but they ended up together, which was actually quite nice. I was like, it's nice to see, like, an ending where it's kind of believable. Like, they go through their own, like, kind of stuff, but they actually kind of just get together at the end of the day. That's enough about that. Beautiful. But yeah, so coming up next, we are going to listen to Embrace by Pinnell and then Lonely Cities by Tiger Town.
Hi, this is producer Jay. This week on Loud and Queer, we experienced some technical difficulties, so we lost a little bit of our time with Alistair on the air. The thing that was happening in this part of the show was Dan, Rub and Alistair were talking about ways that they've tried to hide or signal their queerness to other people. Thanks for listening and enjoy the rest of the show.
Trying to be strategic about it, being like, well, I can't pass for like a macho sports guy, but if I go for nerd, then that'll give me cover.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Then
yeah, I feel that.
And so you're like, well, I'll play RuneScape because...
But also because RuneScape's incredible.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Not to, you know...
Yeah.
I learnt to love it from inside as a cloak.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I think like the silliest thing I ever did to kind of mask my queerness was just like try to be really macho. Like not in terms of like my appearance because I'm not a macho dude, but mainly just the stuff that I used to do, like... Oh, you know, like I was doing competitive fishing. I was like going fishing, like going camping all the time with like my dad, with the boys, like all that stuff. Like getting really involved in that. I was drinking beer when I didn't like it or stuff like that. And yeah, I guess I was just like, oh yeah, I was like doing boxing, you know, all that, like all that kind of stuff. I was just trying to really get like macho and like be macho and kind of like have no one question it. But I was also like a raging emo, so all these piercings and like a fringe and like my hair was straightened. It took me an hour to get ready in the morning so that my hair had to be perfect for school. But so like I don't know, it was a bit of a mix of stuff. I guess
emo is definitely the like pupa stage of full-blown queer.
Yeah, definitely. It's like you're an embryo, like, and you're slowly growing.
But it's funny talking about the sports stuff. I used to do, objectively, I guess for a boy, to do quite a queer pastime, which was horse riding, because I have like muscular dystrophy, and so they make you do it as medicine to work on balance if you have any kind of physical disability in this country. Any disabled kids out there will connect with this and hate it, but it's definitely, if your only frame of reference is the saddle club, and did they really let boys into the saddle club? I don't know. I wanted to connect with it. And but also, I think I'd not talk about it at school because it was not a super mask sport to do compared to like footy or cricket or something like that.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of liked footy though.
Yeah.
Not based on the fact that I was good at it or anything. I just liked being able to tackle dudes to the ground.
Yeah, of course.
Just kind
of
good.
Yeah.
But
okay, contact.
Yeah, exactly. But I can't really think of anything that I have done to signal like my queerness. Yeah. It's like not like I've like hooked up my phone to a projector and like displayed my Grindr profile like somewhere public or something like that. I guess like the most, I don't know, like I can't think of anything silly that I've done to like.
There is, I certainly think if you're like on Facebook and if there was a guy that like he didn't list his interests as male, but he didn't list it as female, and it just had nothing. That, to me, was always a sure sign. Or at least for, like, a very, like, frustrated teenage boy to, like, trick yourself into thinking it could work.
Yeah.
If they, like, weren't explicitly straight in their Facebook bio.
Yeah, that's true, actually.
I guess something that I also do as well, I'm pretty keen on, like, on my Instagram posts, just chucking a rainbow flag on the end or something like that.
Yes.
And, like, I don't know, it's just, like... Why not?
Exactly. Like, the emoji keyboard's right there.
Yeah, exactly. It's just like go crazy.
Just use it. So next up, we got a few more songs. We are going to listen to Darling by Froyo, and then Ether by Habits. And then after that, we have an interview with Simona Castricum.
Hello, you're listening to Loud and Queer on Sin Nation. My name's Alistair, and we just heard Ether by Habits, and right before that, we heard Darling by Froyo. Moving ahead with the show, we're about to interview Simona Castricum. Rob, Daniel, if you'd like to
Yeah, so we're going to have a chat to Simona Kashikam, who is a musician, DJ and producer from Melbourne. She will be playing at the Gay Times Festival, which is next weekend. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we're just excited to sort of jump into the chat and learn a bit more about her. So, hey, Simona, how's it going today?
I'm good, thanks. How are you?
Great, thank you.
It's lovely. Lovely to talk to you finally, Simona.
Great.
So, yeah, we're just going to start off with a few more, just a few questions. Mainly, like, what I want to start off with is, how did your, like, when did you start this, like, music kind of career? Like what sparked the interest? Like, how old were you? Like, what were you doing?
Well, I mean, I started making music in the late 90s. I was studying architecture.
Oh, wow.
It was kind of at that moment where everyone was swapping software.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think I, you know, ended up with a version of some sequencing software and just taught myself how to use it. And it was infinitely more interesting than the architecture software I was using.
I can imagine.
but in a way, I kind of understood them in a similar way. So in the same way that you would create music in a cinematic way, mm-hmm. That you would also create cities in a kind of cinematic way as well. And there's something interesting about music and architecture for me, and that they kind of, you know, they kind of tell stories about life. And
yeah.
So, well, you know, yeah. Music for me is really about articulating lived experience. I think that was where the interest kind of came from, apart from also the really, you know, more obvious stuff like just enjoying dancing and enjoying dance music and enjoying the kind of, I don't know, sort of techno pop sounds that I've always been into all my entire life. So I just wanted to make them.
Yeah, cool, absolutely. That sounds amazing. I love that answer.
I guess springboarding off that answer, before the interview, I was kind of curious about what would you sort of describe as the main goals of your music?
Well, I think it's, like I just said, I think trying to articulate a lived experience of emotion and of isolation.
Okay.
And to try and, I don't know, just to really engage with a really deep, profound feeling of sadness, but also, like, of euphoria as well. And I really like how music can achieve those two things all at the same time. So, I mean, one of the great things about techno and dance music and pop music and that lineage too is that it provides kind of like a space for particularly me as a very openly trans feminine person that I've been able to find myself through. So it's also been about identity.
Okay.
And trying to write about that, but also find community as well. So through performing, through DJing at clubs and, you know, making friends.
Yeah. And do you, like, interact? Like, obviously you would, but, like, do you obviously interact with like other queer artists or collaborate with other queer artists, or like what kind of clubs do you play at? Is it mainly a queer crowd, or is it a bit diverse?
Well, I mean queer space has always been like a friendly space.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, even like through the days of rave, for instance, in the 90s, or even just going to like shows, you know, like band shows and stuff, like they weren't really kind of safe spaces to be, you know, openly trans feminine. For instance, you know, probably some really bro-y techno parties that were in the 90s that were probably safer for a trans feminine person than, for instance, some riot girl parties.
Yeah, well.
So at least I could try and dance at the front at a party, at a rave party. But a lot of that's kind of changed now. So there's disability to, I think one of the things I've always seen myself not only as a DJ but in a live context, and mm-hmm. I've really wanted to, you know, be an openly queer musician in a live venue. So being able to play in places like the Toad or places like the Corner Hotel,
yeah.
in Melbourne, I think have been really big achievements for the queer community in the last 10 to 15 years because, I think otherwise it was, we'd just be sort of playing in sort of basement queer clubs and or we had to exist on the stage in a particular way. And I certainly wanted to do something to change that for me at least.
Yeah, awesome. Awesome.
And that's generated a really great community. So.
Okay. And when you're performing live, what sort of the general atmosphere of the audience, but also for you, like, do you find performing sort of exhilarating, or how would you sort of depict it?
You're kind of going into this kind of relationship with the people that are in your audience. When I go up there, I'm really trying to make this connection and trying to create an event space in that sense. So, and it's like a shared space of catharsis, if you like. It's, because what I'm being quite vulnerable. I'm singing about things that are kind of bearing my soul. And sometimes you make eye contact with people in the crowd and, you're not quite sure if they're looking at you out of, if they're looking at you out of shock or looking at you out of connection, I'm not quite sure. But so there's definitely this sense of connection that I'm always trying to achieve. But I think ultimately getting people to dance.
Yeah,
And also the way I play the drums on stage and the mechanics, the body mechanics of that and the expression of that is as the body and how we all come together in a way of just dancing to brutal techno.
Yeah,
kind of fun, it's just like there are more than one way to do that kind of stuff other than, DJing in a club. So I try and vary that up.
Yeah, for sure. And do you have anything that you kind of like want to plug, like anything upcoming that you have, or like any shows you're going to do in the future that you just kind of like, just want to shamelessly plug on there?
Obviously got the Gay Times Festival coming up this weekend, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah.
Cable Ties Ball at the Corner Hotel.
Oh, cool.
I think it's going to be amazing with Habits and Miss Blank.
Oh,
okay.
Lovely.
It's gonna be. I think it's gonna be one of the gigs of the year. Don't do nothing stupid and miss out on a ticket for that one.
Okay, I'll be sure to buy a ticket.
And then I'm up to Sydney for Mardi Gras in a couple of weeks. And
amazing.
Yeah, it's a busy. Yeah, I will. If we're in the same spot, who knows? There's like plenty of side parties. That's just one of the side parties that I'll be playing at.
Amazing, it sounds great.
Who knows? Who knows where kick-ons are for Mardi Gras? It's just one big weekend.
Simo, we just want to say a massive thank you for having a chat with us today. And it's just been really great to hear a bit of your story and about your music. And all the best with your upcoming gigs. They sound really exciting. We're also going to play your tune Triumph up after this interview. And we just want to say a massive thank you for talking to us today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thanks so much.
Thanks so much. And have fun. We'll see you soon.
See you.
Thanks. You're listening to Loud and Queer on Sin Nation. My name's Daniel and you're here with Alistair and Rob. You just heard Triumph by Simona Castricum. And that basically wraps up our show for this week. If you want to follow us on Twitter, you can find us at Sin Loud. Sin is spelled S-Y-N. What about you guys? Have you got anything you want to plug before we go off?
I'll plug my Twitter. It better get as many followers as the Loud and Queer Twitter account. I'm at Baldwin Alistair, and I I'm also producing a comedy show, Lemon Comedy, that's coming up this Valentine's Day, programming a diverse lineup of comics. And if you want to get tickets for that, please do. And I'll also be talking about it slightly later on 90.7. If you're in the Melbourne area, that's Sin on the In Joke Show. So tune in if you can.
Nice. And I'm going to shamelessly plug my Instagram because I am an aspiring photographer and I need constant validation. So you can follow my Instagram at Rob Corica, RobCorica. Please follow it.
And you can also catch our podcast on Omni, iTunes or SoundCloud. That should be up midweek this coming week. So hopefully you can have a listen if you want to.
We'll put it on our Twitter.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Yep.
Thanks for listening. Have a nice week.
See you guys.
See ya.
You can tune in to hear Loud and Queer streaming live on Sin Nation at sin.org.au. You can find more of our episodes on Omni, SoundCloud and iTunes. Our podcast music is by Accident. You can find more of her music on Bandcamp. You can find us on Facebook in the Sin Nation Loud and Queer Community Cafeteria and find us on Twitter at Sin Loud.